Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner back. He was ignoring me for like 4 days, 5 days while he was out helping with our U.S. Open coverage. Jay Posner, sports editor. Jay, welcome back to the Padres beat. Just in time for Padres-Dodgers round two. Because the first seven games, even though it was two series, felt like one continuous, just sensational series.
Yeah, I was just refreshing my memory, trying to get golf out of the brain. Although I did try to keep, I did keep up with the Padres and didn't get to watch as many of the games as I had hoped, but caught some of it here and there, and certainly read our fine coverage from you and Jeff Sanders filled in for you for a couple days after the road trip. So. Yeah, it was quite a seven game series that these teams played. As I looked back at it over those 10 days, and just some amazing games that were played. And I mean, the first game and the last game both went into extra innings, and each team won one of those games. And I mean, we can go back. We'll go back later and look, kind of go over what happened in those games. But it was crazy. And also, I would think that. Padre fans would be feeling a little better about the team. We did not do a show on Thursday as we normally would have, and I'm not exactly sure what we would have said at that point after a sweep by the Rockies, and it would have felt like kind of Groundhog Day with the way this team was going. But turned it around against the Reds, and the Reds had been playing well when they came in here. I mean, I don't think they'd beaten anybody good, but they were over 500, and I think it just swept the Rockies, who of course it just swept the Padres. So where do you want to start? You want to start with the weekend and how the Padres sort of turned things around a little bit? What was the...
Yeah, I think that's important.
What did you see this weekend? I guess the big thing Thursday night was the game where it almost was a disaster. Mark Melancon with an awful ninth inning, and then the Padres with an incredible comeback with the two home runs by Hosmer and Caratini to win the game. And I don't think either one of us... I know I wasn't there, and I don't think you were there either. Thursday, but you probably heard the cheers way up where you live from a packed Petco on Thursday night.
Well, I was still out of town, spending a couple of days with family, but yeah, that was, and here's what's remarkable about that. You know, Melancon, or I think, I don't know if remarkable, but good for the Padres. Melancon gave up the four runs, and you know what? He hasn't been untouchable of late, and yet, mm-hmm. He got save in the last two games. He bounced back in addition to the Padres bounced back. And of course, it's easy to say afterward, but they pointed to that, the comeback, the home runs, the crowd as mm-hmm. sort of energizing them through the weekend. And I will tell you, Jay, that, you know, it was as good as you're going to see for a Red series. That's for darn sure. and the Reds had beat the Brewers, who had momentarily overtaken the Padres in record, mm-hmm. As we keep an eye on the playoff chase, you know, with only whatever, 85 games to go. I really think that obviously they hit better. You know, they slugged better. They pitched pretty well. They played almost flawless defense. So let's go ahead and say that those are the reasons they swept the Reds. But the crowd, the energy, and this is a team that feeds off energy. And I think both you and I are careful to use the words flat because, you know, we've spent a lot of time watching teams that don't perform and they look flat. Well, I think this team was flat. And I think that the crowd really got them. Jay, you have watched more baseball at Petco Park than I have. But as an in-person, you have done that over many mm-hmm. years. But the Ha-Sung Kim home run, after his name was being chanted, the crowd of 38,000 on a Saturday night, this isn't a team with a great lore of fantastic moments. It's just not.
Right.
I think that moment has to be up there in Petco Park moments, and especially if this team ends up, you know, going to the playoffs, making a run in the playoffs, and you look back at when they were struggling and how they'd blown a lead in that game, and he responds seconds after the chant had sort of died down. That was incredible.
While you were saying that, I was thinking, well, obviously the Thursday night moments would be up there as well, because, you know, they were going to lose at that point.
Sure.
When Hosmer homered and to tie the game. Saturday night's game was tied when that happened. But one thing that does help make the Kim moment special was why he was even in the game in the first place, which right. is the one reason to be concerned about, you know, what we saw over the weekend was Fernando Tatis Jr., of course, going out of that game after diving for a ball and, you know, pop. I don't know if his shoulder popped out or jammed it or exactly what happened. I know he hasn't talked since then, so we don't know exactly what he's going to say about what he did to his shoulder, but it forced him out of the game. So Kim was in for that. And of course it's big for, you know, a guy to come through like that. And he seems so popular with the other players, you know, and especially a guy like Machado, who he has said kind of treats him like a little brother, even though they're probably the same age, you know. But still, I mean, there's that sort of brotherhood that they have, and Kim seems to be very popular in the dugout. And that was a great moment to watch. And obviously, the one thing I do want to say about the crowd, and you know, the Padres had looked a little flat, obviously, during this stretch, whether they were flat or just not playing well,
right.
the crowd picked them up. I will say they went 37-23 last year with no fans at Petco. So it's great to say, yeah, the crowd really picked us up. But yeah, you know, you guys played last year with no fans and you did pretty well. So whatever you were doing then, maybe go back to sort of relying on that a little bit and not just the crowd. But look, to show appreciation for the crowd is a great thing. And it did sound quite lively there. And I'm looking forward to getting out to a couple of the Dodger games this week. And it should be crazy for those. So,
yeah, the relationship between the fans and the players seems to have grown. The connection. Mm-hmm. Look, let's be honest. I mean, and this isn't a slam. This is just simple candor here. It's San Diego. The team has not been good. Petco Park is a fantastic place to go. We're talking about moms taking the Little League team, a great place to go to a drink beer. I have been around all the ballparks, not that I sample all the fare, but the food is fantastic at Petco. Mm-hmm. Again, the team has sucked. The connection between the engagement of the fans has not been as high as it has been this year. This year has surpassed most years, and I have been going to games for a long time.
Sure, no.
This has been fantastic. And so the engagement and the fact that they were appreciating this guy, this substitute, and I'll tell you mm-hmm. what, they're starting to appreciate his defense, the fans. You can tell that they are.
Right.
And I've just been kind of they're really impressed by the engagement, that's the word that I'm using, of the fans this year. I really think it's cool.
I agree, and we talked about it at the beginning of the year when the fans first came back, and even though there were only like 10,000 for the first part of the season, or 12,000, then they upped it to 15 whatever the totals were, but it was much smaller crowds. But we talked about that first, I think it was the first weekend or the first set of games, and certainly against the Dodgers, where the crowd was so into the game, and it felt different than it often does there. And for good reason. I mean, the teams over the past so many years, 15 years, basically, with the exception of, you know, bits and pieces of a couple of years, have not given people a reason to really engage. And I think people, the fans here, are so into this team because they so want and to enjoy something and have and be able to cheer the teams that they haven't been able to cheer for so long. And so it's really kicked it up a bit. And I'm sure, I mean, it was crazy for the Dodger series the first time. And now you're going to have, like, you know, three or four times as many people there this week. And so I can only imagine, you know, what it's going to sound like over these next few nights at Petco.
Regardless of the makeup of the crowd, it is going to be, really intense. I'm positive of it. Let's talk just for a second before we move on. You know, it was a lot easier to have a vast majority of Padres fans when it was only season ticket holders and there was a limited capacity. And that was one thing that stood out, is there were not, relatively speaking, that many Dodgers fans at the first series. Tonight will be interesting.
No, I think it will, and I would expect Dodger fans to be there. I mean,
of course,
I don't take that as a I know there's people who want to say, oh, the San Diego fans, you know, don't care. I mean, look, this is a destination type place, and not just for people to come to, we've talked about before, not just for people to come to for a few days, but people who live here, people that have moved from other places. You know, our producer was just talking to me before we came on the air about, I won't say where he's from. It's not in California, but it was a place where he said, boy, I could not wait to move to San Diego. And I think there's so many people like that who have said, I can't wait to move to San Diego. And so, but they, it doesn't mean they become Padre fans, because just like the Padres go on the road, and you've seen them this year.
A lot
fans
more.
Or other places. Those aren't people who have just made the trip. Those are people who live there now in Chicago or New York or wherever. And they're now proud to sport the colors of the Padres, whereas maybe before it wasn't like that. But I think that's the case now, where you're going to have Dodger fans there this week, and I was going to say the next series you're going to have Diamondback fans, but I don't want to get carried away. Although, anything to get out of Arizona, you know, we know that, but man, that's a bad team. Anyway.
But great point. And because I have so much time on my hands, I have been thinking about that going and talking to some of these fans, because in other cities, because it has been remarkable. First off, you know it more now, because they're wearing brown, exactly. But they're dressing up. They're dressing up. There were these guys in Friar outfits in Houston. People have swag chains, not just in San Diego, but they've found them. They order them online. I guess that's a thing you can do now. The kids do is order things online. You're in Chicago. People have swag chains, and you're at Wrigley Field. You're at Dodger Stadium. You're all these places where you're at Citi Field. Places where, come on, you would see like two to Padres fans, right. And there are plentiful, to the point when something good happens, you can actually hear a cheer like you do, almost like you do at Petco, like when the Cardinals are here or something. But we do. People, fans of San Diego teams, you're at a disadvantage because this is a great place to go. I mean, look, there's only one reason to go to St. Louis, and it's to watch sports. So to see the arch and then leave, to drive through, right. Like, oh, there's the arch. Nothing against the fine people of St. Louis and their fried ravioli. This Hot Lava Padres podcast segment is brought to you by Jack Powell Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram, located in Escondido and serving the San Diego community for over 60 years.
Are you waiting for a great reason to buy a new car? How about because, baseball? So what is a great opening day special? How about 0% APR for 48 months on new 2021 Ram 1500s, Dodge Chargers, Jeep Compass, and Jeep Grand Cherokees? That's a great reason and a great deal. But do you also need a great place? That's easy. Come to Jack Powell Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Escondido, San Diego, where we make shopping easy. Find these deals during the Ram Spotlight Sales Event.
So here come the Dodgers, Jay, and the Padres, like you said, are playing better. And one thing I want to point out, Jay, we didn't get to talk about this. I was in the Denver airport working on the newsletter, and I got this thing called Tidbits. It's my favorite part, little stat things. And so I'm working on, and I know Manny Machado has been hitting better. And I go over, oh, all right, cool, look at this. All right, 9 games. All right, I knew it. Okay, yeah, good. 870 OPS over the previous 9 games at that point. Jay, that was his best 9-game stretch of the season. So, you know, earlier in the day, I'd made this list of 5 things of why the Padres were struggling that I'd put in the paper. Well, by the time a much extended list got in the newsletter, it was 6, because I was embarrassed to have not known just how poorly Manny Machado was playing and how much he had let down this team. A 9-game stretch by Manny Machado by June should be like 1,300. He should have a 9-game stretch in which he has 6 home runs. Why? Because he's making $30 million and he's the best player on this team. All right. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. is the most dynamic. He will be the best, but Manny Machado is the highest paid and the guy who you absolutely count on. Jace Tingler's been talking about it since April. You absolutely count on Manny Machado going on a 12-15 game stretch where the other team, everybody in the ballpark, the Padres are elevated by it, because you know he is going to smoke the ball every time, or they're going to pitch around him. And that hasn't happened. Now, it's now 979 OPS over the last 13 games. So it does appear that Manny Machado is approaching that first stretch of games in which he is Manny. So there you go.
And he's the one thing that that never seems to go away is his defense.
Oh, gosh, it's
which
amazing.
Is just it really is. And it just he seems to get better, actually, defensively, which doesn't really seem possible. And it's but he's been fantastic with the glove all year. And you're right. It's so big for this team when he can get going with the bat. We should talk about Tatis. What can you say about what's been going on and what happened Saturday? And it sounded like yesterday he was going to come. He might have come up and pinch hit. You wrote that he's likely to be back tonight. So what's the word about his condition right now?
I really do think, as much as we've become accustomed to maybe not being told the truth and silence this year is unbelievable from all around the league. But it appears that it was precautionary. And I think that the mood around this incident where he kind of jammed his left shoulder diving for a ball is night and day from April, or kind of like the mood that when he was coming back, where, you know, it still is. What happened was inevitable. That he, and we talked about that quite a bit, that there was going to be a time where, look, it's baseball. No matter how careful you are, something's going to happen. Well, look, he went 49 games with no incident really whatsoever. And he's been so in control on the field. You see him out practicing certain ways to backhand and reach and put that shoulder and his swing. And so the mood right now is like, no, look, all right, we've got this thing under control. That was something to be very careful about, and going to pick up where he left off. But it was a reminder, Jay, that this thing's there.
Right. And it's probably going to happen again because the thing is, that's not the first time we've seen him dive like that, or even close to the first time. But obviously there are times where it's just the way he's going to land, or the way the shoulder is, where something is going to happen. He's going to feel it. And I would be shocked if we didn't see it happen again. And hopefully when it does, it's something like this, where it's okay, give him, you know, he needs a break, even if it's a couple of days or whatever. And then he's back out there. And certainly if there's a guy you want in the lineup against the Dodgers, based on the last time that the Padres and Dodgers played, it would be Fernando Tatis, who only hit 5 home runs in the last 3 games there in LA, starting with 2 on that Friday night against Kershaw, who will pitch tomorrow night's game, and then 2 more the next night against Trevor Bauer, who will pitch Wednesday's game. Tonight it's Julio Urias for the Dodgers, Yu Darvish for the Padres, and Darvish has pitched well, really well, in both games against the Dodgers. He kind of beat himself in that one game with Kershaw, with the inability to get Kershaw out. But at least he doesn't have to face Kershaw tonight at the plate. But I think he only allowed 1 or 2 runs total in those two games back in April. So we have that. And then Tuesday night is Blake Snell, who also pitched fairly well against the Dodgers. Didn't go too deep into the games, but pitch well. The Dodgers have really struggled against left-handed pitching for most of the season. And then Wednesday night is so that's Snell against Kershaw, and then Bauer against Joe Musgrove in the Wednesday night game. And Musgrove had that had that weird game in LA, I think, where he pitched 3 innings, only gave up 1 run, I believe, but threw about 220 pitches in those 3 innings, and had to come out of the game. And that's the last time these teams saw each other. The Padres left Nick Ramirez out there to sort of get battered around because the bullpen was wiped out. And I think there was one of those games where, if we lose, we lose. You know, we're getting out of here. And then, amazingly, they came back and won the game and won 3 out of 4. And it gave them the 4-3 lead in the series. So many great things happened in that series. The Cronenworth double play happened back then. What else do you remember?
The fact that it was so tense. The fact that I can't remember the exact numbers, kind of rehashed it today in the newsletter.
Saw that.
The fact that it was so close almost the whole entire series, and it was close late in games. I think there were a couple scores that won the first game, the extra inning game where the Dodgers piled on in the 11th that was skewed completely. And then there was one where the Padres, I think it was the Friday night game, won by 4, but that was late as well. Yep. Every game was close, like not just the final score, but throughout. Hey, that was the thing. As you said, the individual moments, they were incredible. It was the fact that, wow. And so as I'm thinking here, I'm going, it can't possibly, like, this series can't possibly be as good. Well, we didn't think like the next night could live up to the previous night in those first 7 games. And like I said, because it was 7-10, it really felt like one series. Now, fortunately for the Padres, they had, 2 days off in the next 4 after that final game in L.A. And they do have a day off after this one, too, if it does get to be intense like that. You know, they did have to use a few more relievers yesterday. So it looks like you'll see you could possibly see Nick Ramirez again. You can see the debut of Mason Thompson, 2 relievers that were called up yesterday. Mason Thompson now, I believe, will be your hardest throwing reliever, probably by far. And so it's going to be, interesting to see. What I think is happening here, Jay, is the Padres are trying to see what they have in their bullpen, because, the trade deadline is a month and a half away or a little less than that. And so we're starting to see some, but in addition to the fact that their bullpen is, and you can see it in some of the results. Guys like Tim Hill, Mark Melancon even has been getting a lot of rest. Craig Stammen, he's not getting any rest, but he's pitched a lot of games. They're getting a little, you knew they were going to go through the season with a sub-2 ERA. There's a lot of things that are going to – they just swept the Reds, who – okay, great. They had been hot, but they're not one of the better teams in the league. They're facing 3 really good pitchers. Urias has not been as good recently, but right. Still, it's like every pitcher except Snell has a 3.5 ERA or lower in this series for both teams. Every starting pitcher. They're going to face Kershaw and Bauer, who goes 6 or 7 innings every time out. Almost 3 or fewer runs almost every one of those times. Musgrove, to me, has been number 2, right behind Yu Darvish, in terms of a guy who you can be fairly certain when he goes out there, he's going to give you 6, possibly 7. I can't wait. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I know one guy the Dodgers will be happy not to see is Ryan Weathers. who's pitched well against them in two of those 7 games. Weathers, I think those were his first 2 major league starts, if I remember correctly. Yep. And he was outstanding in both of them. He won't be here. I think the Dodgers, and especially, they'll be happy he's not here when Bellinger and Muncy, I believe, will probably both be activated during the series. I saw something today that said both of them are expected back either Tuesday or Wednesday. So I'm not sure which days we'll see them. But, the Dodgers are they were struggling for a while, but I looked, they're 26-10 since May the 11th. So that includes winning 10 of their last 12. They have not been playing the best teams. So it's a step up in class for them as well. Those 12 were against the Pirates, the Rangers, the Phillies, and the Diamondbacks. But as I said, they also have been playing without guys like Bellinger and Muncy, along with Corey Seager, who will not be back in time for that. Those are 3 pretty good players that they're doing without. So, I mean, you talk about the Padres have had some injury issues. I mean, the Dodgers have really had them with those guys, and their offense just keeps, those guys miss games, and I think their offense is still 2nd in the majors in runs scored. They still find a way, whoever's in the lineup, to grind out, to grind out runs. Albert Pujols has been really good. I never would have expected that. I'm sure we'll see him tomorrow night against Snell. And probably, maybe in a pinch hitting situation. One thing we should mention, and the fact that Bauer's coming here and has been so outspoken about it, is tonight starts the great crackdown, the Manfred crackdown, against these substances that pitchers are using. And it just sounds like Major League Baseball has made a mess of this situation. And, you talked to Joe Musgrove last week about it, and he had some good things to say about, and I've seen other pitchers talk about it around the league, where this whole idea of going from being able to use something to being able to use absolutely nothing right in the middle of the season. You know, same baseball, and now you're not going to let us use anything to get a little better grip on it. So that's going to be something to watch over this week. And not to pick on Bauer, but I think with all the pitchers, because look, let's be honest, probably what, 80% of guys, 75, 80% of guys were using some, I'm not saying they're all using, you know, spider tack or whatever, that kind of stuff, but they're using some, even if it was just rosin and sunscreen mix, just something to get a little bit of a grip on the baseball. And you know that the umpires aren't prepared for this. I mean, these guys can't see a play that happens 2 feet in front of them. And now you're going to ask them to be judge and jury on what a guy, you know, what kind of sweat this guy has on the mound. I'm really curious how this works out, and almost cringing with what's going to happen, because somebody's going to get tossed from a game here. And it may be in San Diego, it may be in Pittsburgh, it may be in Miami or whatever, but something's going to happen, and I think it's going to cause problems around.
It seems inevitable, and I generally push back on that, because we, the media and fans, generally when there's some sort of change, a rule change or something happens, we predict Armageddon, and it doesn't happen. Or if it happens, it's brief, it's this blip, and then everybody adjusts because rules are the rules. I just don't, from talking with people and thinking about how this is going to go, an umpire must check a starting pitcher, I think it's at least like twice. It's a reliever at least once. And the fact that, you know, you could conceivably have sweat mixed with rosin and you know, look the same as sunscreen with rosin, and it's on the forearm or the wherever. And then a guy gets tossed and he's out 10 games and his team can't replace him. And the umpire was the only arbiter of the, I mean, it's mind boggling. Right. That right. This could happen. And so I'm almost like, I'm not even pushing back. I'm like, yeah, this is going to be a mess. I really, wow. And in the middle of the season, and then you see, I believe that Pierce Johnson, his triceps issue, there was a suggestion by Jace Tingler that, you know, pitchers are sore. Pierce Johnson's on the IL after pitchers have been gearing up for this, throwing bullpens, throwing in games without anything. And Pierce Johnson's not a cheater. Musgrove's not a cheater. Now, I guess if you're going to go by the biblical, you know, the black and white of, well, it says not to use anything. If you're using something, you were cheating. Well, since the beginning of time, players have been mixing sweat or they wear sunscreen when it's sunny out. Now, if you've got sunscreen on in Tropicana Field or whatever it's called right now, then, you know, you're probably maybe skirting the rules a little bit.
Right,
but these guys have just been using a little something that's basically naturally occurring. They give them a rosin bag, and now you're going to zero injuries, suspensions without like any sort of ability to appeal. I mean, I'm blown away, Jay. I really am. And I'm not a guy who gets blown away by this. As a matter of fact, like I said, I push back from, hey, calm down, everybody. We're going to be okay. This seems awful.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to be wrong. And, you know, so let's see what happened. And maybe nothing happens, and maybe nothing happens at the beginning. Maybe it happens at the beginning and it dies down. I don't know, but it's definitely something worth keeping an eye on this week around the league and especially here. And I do think, like you said, you mentioned whether a guy's a cheater or not. I mean, I think it's going to be too bad when there are certain guys who are probably going to get busted on this who are innocently using what everybody's been using. There are other guys who are going to get busted because they really were cheating and using this stuff that, you know, created extra spin and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you hate to see somebody sort of get branded like that, and everybody's going to be eager to brand somebody a cheater when they might have been doing something that everybody else was doing. But anyway, hopefully we're wrong. Hopefully nothing happens. Hopefully there's no
injury. The umpires surprise us and they are extremely judicious. I mean,
exactly. You know. Yeah, because if there's anything that umpires usually are, it's judicious and willing to look the other way. And I mean, just look at the Joey Votto case the other day. I mean, that was a perfect example of how umpiring is supposed to work, right? I mean, I mean, that was that's probably right out of their textbook. You know, when a guy's walking away from you and talking to some other umpire, you should get involved because that's what they teach you at umpire school or something. I don't know. Anyway, let's hope for a great series. We said before, it's impossible to think. After the first series at Petco, we said, boy, the series in L.A. can't possibly live up to what we saw at Petco. And yet every game did. So let's hope that these three continue the series, and then we'll come back on Friday and talk about the Diamondbacks.
Oh, yay. Oh, my gosh. I had forgot about that. I can't wait. Thank you, everybody.